Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mindful Pod. I'm here with Matteo Grassi. Hopefully I've pronounced that right. He'll correct me in a second if I haven't. He's the co-founder of Pop-Up. And as his LinkedIn says, my mum says I'm special, which I particularly like. Hello, Matteo. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. You know, the name was right. Perfect pronunciation.
Yeah?
Yes.
Good, good.
You got it right.
So we've met a few times already. We've had some amazing conversations just within the first sort of half an hour of a random LinkedIn reach out. I remember just feeling like there was something pretty special, and we had a good connection, which is always really nice. So yeah, we decided to do a podcast to delve into some of the topics that are really that you're really passionate about, particularly focused around your journey. So would you like to start by just letting everyone know sort of who you are and your journey to now being the co-founder of Pop-Up?
My name is Matteo. I'm originally from Italy. I left Italy in my early 20s after a degree in psychology, which I end up not using. Or maybe I used it, but not in the way it was meant to be used. I brought my psychology skill more into like marketing and networking, and eventually, what bring me here today. And then I traveled a little bit all over the world. So I left Italy, moved to New York. I wanted to be a dancer at the time. So I moved to New York, ended up in Broadway, danced for a bit, and then moved to Australia, joined the circus over there. I wanted to try that for a while and travel to the circus for a year. And then when I went back to Europe and started to work in like marketing, moved to Ireland, where I got a job here as a marketing manager for a pretty large company. Ended up losing that job because the recession hit. Went back to decided to start my own business because I really wanted to keep on traveling, and I wanted to be, I think, free. I wanted to be free. I didn't want to just be in one place. I wanted to have the freedom to move wherever I wanted. And at the time, remote work wasn't a thing. So there was no remote jobs, really. And I was like, it looks like if I start an e-commerce business, it might give me the freedom that I need and then make money, and I can basically run it wherever I want. And this is where I started basically to work in e-commerce. That was 15 years ago. So I launched my first e-commerce store, before Shopify was a thing, before Facebook ads was a thing, very much on like SEO and cold outreach. Ended up doing marketplaces, eBay, I did a bit of Etsy. Then I did a bit of Amazon as well at the time. And then my career in e-commerce brought me into consulting for other e-commerce businesses, launching different brands, which some went okay, but most of them failed. Ended up working in Shopify with a remote job, and then co-founded a direct-to-consumer brands with my business partner, Corey, and Kate as well. And then, which we are all basically three ex-Shopify people. And what happened was we grew the brand bootstrap with like $40 million in revenue in our first year. And then at the time, we started to think about the next phase of our life. And with Corey, we decided to basically build an e-commerce platform that's what today is Pop-Up. And this is where I am right now, building an e-commerce platform to empower, I think, entrepreneurs on a global level, from people that are starting out to people that have existing businesses. Because my core belief, I think, is that we should live in, that the economy should be decentralized. So we shouldn't give too much power to corporations or to centralize organization. I think small businesses hold the power and give us the ability to kind of adapt as well to the ever-changing markets and ever-changing landscape. So I think we pop up empowering businesses on a global level, especially small businesses, from SMBs to the sole entrepreneurs, is what I think what gets me really excited more than anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving around there. I think a lot of people would be very jealous about all the traveling and the places that you've lived in. But I know that can also come with some sacrifice as well, moving around. But how was that? And did you enjoy a lot of the moving around from first the jobs and also countries. What was that like for you?
I think there is a big misconception of, you know, like if you're moving around, you have this kind of digital nomad lifestyle and you're living in front of your laptop and, you know, you have this amazing lifestyle. And it's really not like that. I mean, it's like for some people, but I haven't actually met many people that, they were 100% happy about where they were. You know, there's always downside. Now, when I was moving around a lot, I didn't have a digital nomad. So I was traveling and I was working in mainly bars. I was working in hospitality. As I said, I was working in circus for a while as a performer. Mm. I think there is a lot of adventures, and I think my life had a lot of adventures, and that brought me a lot of like stories to tell. I understood a lot of how to deal with people, and I learned a lot. But it came at a cost. Sometimes you feel lonely. I ended up living in Australia for a while, and it's really hard to connect with people. A lot of the times you meet people and then they end up leaving again or walking away. So it's really hard to find a connection as well with people for a long time. So no regrets, but it's not for everyone. And I don't think people should think about, oh yeah, I want to travel around the world and this is going to be for me. I think you might be happier wherever you are, but I push people to try things, right? That's the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally resonate with that. I've just particularly as just coming back from sort of 9 or so months of trying out the digital nomad life. And it's so funny because I went to scratch that travel itch and you think, I actually want to work. I thought when I went into it, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, work and travel, stay in places for a few months or a year, whatever it is. And after doing a few different trips in the most amazing places, although I had an incredible time, enjoyed my work whilst doing it, you naturally start to miss the home comforts, you know? So then suddenly it's the stuff that you don't have that you miss. And the things that you do have, like the traveling, you start to get a little bit bored of, which is the sort of big lesson about life, which is that, you know, it's, as you said, it's really important to try things. But often I think we always think that the grass is greener and it's going to be better. You know, if I travel, then that'll sort out all my issues or I'll be happy all the time. And it's just never like that from my experience of life. But one of the questions that I wanted to go back to, it's probably on the minds of lots of people listening right now, is what did you perform as a circus artist? What would you call it, performer?
I was dancing with fire, so I was a fire jump.
Okay, I was imagining you on a giant ball. That's for some reason what I saw. Have you done that part or?
No. It was mainly fire juggling with fire chains. Both fire.
That's awesome.
Fire chains like poi, POI, which is the Maori, dance. And then I use so as well, literally fire chains, like the long ones. So just literally mostly fire dancing, but it came because I have a background as a dancer, from modern dance to hip hop and break dance and things like that. So it really started to me that the story is like, I was traveling around Australia. So I was crossing the desert with my friends in this like 45 days, 2 months trip. And then when you are in the desert, you're like, you're traveling during the day. But then when you camp, there's literally nothing to do. Like, you know, you just read a book. And I got into this fire poison. I got this, the chains, and I started practicing. And I was practicing like 2-3 hours every day. And then I got the moves right. And because I knew how to dance, it came very natural to me. So while we were traveling, I met these guys, these circus guys, and they were like, actually, we're back in Sydney. And for the next tour, we would love you to join. And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds like a great idea. I mean, I didn't have much at the time. I was working in a bar and the money was actually better in the circus. The money's pretty good, busking. Like it's not, especially if you go like in good areas with tourism. So I joined them and we traveled around Australia to perform.
Amazing.
I got burned.
That's say that again.
I got burned a few times. My hair caught fire twice, I think.
I was gonna say.
Actually,
I bet. That's so. I mean, that's a great experience. What was your greatest learning from working in something like that? Because obviously, again, this is something that I really want to touch on with you is the amount of variety of things that you've done, and now being a co-founder, and kind of if you could give us a little bit of insight into, you know, what sort of really led you into that role, and what all those other roles taught you about yourself.
I think if I look at my life, the moments that I've been the happiest, like really happy, I was really happy when I was working in the circus. I was really, really happy because I was doing something that I love. I was making people enjoy themselves. I was entertaining others, and I wasn't living with much. And I was surrounded by people that weren't living with much. And I didn't really have a worry in my life. I wasn't worried about that. Because when you don't have much, you are not worried about things.
But just worried about burning yourself.
Sorry about worrying yourself. But it's like the... What I think the circus taught me, especially from working with people in the circus, was like their passion. They're doing what they love. They make enough money to support the lifestyle that they makes them happy, and they're also entertaining people, which basically they're making people happy. So you're doing what you love, and at the same time, they're entertaining people, and you get to travel, and you're free. And I think I realized that money wasn't really something that is connected to happiness, and I realized it in there. But I think why did I then join the circus and then started to building a career around, you know, I had like a full on suit job. I mean, it's like when I was working in the big company here in Galway, and then when I moved to Milan and working as a brand strategy, we were working with massive brands, and I was wearing a suit every day of work. So I went completely from like literally joining the circus to wearing a suit. But I think it was ambition. Like, and the idea of what success should be like, right? And this was embedded with me at a very young age. My parents were kind of two hippies as well. So I was trying to kind of move away from what my parents were and trying to be more like an adult, I guess. And I think that went, you know, it just brought me into like the business world. So I'm trying to find out a middle ground between the two. But definitely what I learned in circus, it was that happiness doesn't come from money. People were very happy. Like every colleague that I worked for, they were generally happy and they didn't care about money. And a lot of people had skills that could have, you know, gone into anything that they wanted, but it was a choice.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because we often confuse, you know, making a lot of money with you know, directly impacts your happiness and your health. And whilst they're up to a certain point, it can, for most, it isn't like that. And especially over a certain amount. So I think that's really interesting. Have you found, what else have you learned about that, in terms of the money from your own story, that's kind of led you to this belief now?
Yeah, that once I had enough to not worry about things like, you know, someone gets sick in my family, or my mom loses a job, or, you know, people in my immediate surroundings are okay, then I can help, you know, my family, and I can have enough for me to live a comfortable life without having to worry. That's the point where happiness and money, they just like, they stop to be on the same level. And I realized it wasn't happiness. It was mainly worry and fear, right? That's the time that I didn't have the money, it was mainly worried and fear. And it wasn't really about me. It was mainly about others, you know, some people in my family living a precarious life and knowing that I could not do anything to help them out, on a practical level, you know, because obviously I can give you my emotional support, but you know, money solves problems. That's true. It's like it does solve problems in certain cases, obviously not every problem, but some problems. And that's when I got to a point in my life that I was like, I think I can do this. I can actually solve problems for others, or I can have a cushion that is enough for me and for my immediate family to rely upon. Then yeah, money and happiness start to be kind of related to each other. And also I always had like, every time I make some money, I'll not spend them, but invest them. it's the rule of the wallet. You know, if I had like 100 euro in my wallet, I'm going to spend 100 euro. If I have 5 euro, I'm going to make it last. So I tend to like, if I get cash injections, I always invest in them. To the point that literally when we were doing Visor Group, we took everything that we had and we just put it into pop-up. Just like bootstrap pop-up until to a point that we were like, okay, if we keep on doing this, it's just going to completely drain our company and it's going to be a crash. So that's where we started to look into fundraising and getting more money from others.
Yeah. And so you kind of alluded to it there, but you know, what is the main reason that you continue to, I guess, pursue and go down the entrepreneurial route and build your own business? Because it kind of sounds like actually just going back and sort of joining the circus could be a good backup move. Do you see what I mean in terms of like, why do you choose to do this now? I know that you've said money obviously can solve problems. Is it just that? Are there other things?
I think it's ambition, and I always wanted to finish my life as well. Not finish my life, unfortunately now, but I wanted to have a remarkable life and I wanted to impact the life of a lot of people on a big scale, you know. I wanted to feel like I left a mark, not just like on a small level, but on a big level. And this is comes from ambition. And I don't think that people that are looking to impact other people's life on a small scale is necessarily bad. You know, someone that, you know, there is people that do charity, you know, organization where they're trying to work on a global level. There is some people that every weekend they just go down the, you know, the homeless shelter and sell food. I think both of them are great, but I think it just comes down to ambition, you know, what you wanted to do. And if I do something like going down to the homeless shelter, I would feel good about it, but I will always think about the big picture. And it's something that I can't stop. I know I have skills to do that as well. I know I have a set of skills that allows me to manage business and hire people that are smarter than me to do things, manage people, lead people, and push people as well to achieve their full potential. So I know I can do things on a larger scale. And I would feel that if I don't do that, I will be wasted, right? I think my talent is not necessarily for me to do things, but for me to hire other people and allow them to do other things.
And so that's really interesting. You mentioned about, you know, leading people. And I think particularly at the moment, this is quite a big topic. We sort of throw the words leadership around and, you know, we don't really truly, I think, often understand what that means. What does leadership mean to you, particularly when you're building this company, this latest venture of yours?
Yeah, I have an approach to leadership that is very similar to my approach to parenting. And I think it's, I learned how to be a good parent in the last, 10 years. I think I've been, my daughter is 10. And for the first 5 years, I did it on my own. I didn't read many parenting books and I didn't, study a lot this, but I realized that, I needed to be more like a tutor for my daughter. And not like a master or a manager or, you know, someone that controls her. And I wanted to, it's for me to be there for her to achieve her full potential and support her whenever I can. And she needs to find in me a figure to be inspired upon, right? So I need to be a role model for her at the same time. So she can have an idea of a man, what a man should be or what a good parent should be. And at the same time, for me, is to make sure that she can achieve her full potential with my help. And I do see that as well when I lead people in business. You know, it's like I lead by doing. And once I set up my values and we set up the values in the company and I have my values, I live my values in the world every day. And I try to live my values in the world every day. And people will see that and get inspired by it. And at the same time, I'll try to be there for my team and support them so they can achieve, you know, their full potential without having me to tell them what to do. So something that I sometimes say is like, I work for you, not the other way around. And not, it's like, you have to understand that you have to do whatever you think is best, and you come to me when you need help, and we can work together, and I can coach you or lead you to whatever you want to achieve. But I think you are a good leader as long as people are following you. If people are not following you, if you don't have a vision, if you don't have a mission, if you don't know who you are, if you don't know where you're going, you can't expect people to follow you. Mm-hmm. I think it's many leaders, I think, missing that point. You know, I think it starts with you first. You have to understand who you are, where you're going, and what do you want, and why you're here. You know, it's like what you're doing this for. Once you figure these things out and you truly believe them and you live them out in the world every day, people will get inspired and they will eventually follow you. But if you don't know all of these things, how can you expect people to follow you if you're not sure where you're going? I'm not going to follow someone that has no idea where it's going. Why would I? It's like, I don't trust you, you know? So I think it's, I think that's what leadership is.
Yeah. And on that, how do you show them your vision? You know, how does that work in like a business setting? You know, when you have 10, how many employees do you have?
Which means that we're about 30, okay, in the whole company.
Say not much. That's still 30 more than most. So
we had the maximum I had was, we have around 45 investor group at one stage. And I never led massive teams, maximum like 20, 15. And also my team as well, the team that I manage directly, there is not big. It's about 6 or 7 people. Well, I do find that LinkedIn influencers or social media is a great way to show, to kill kind of 2 birds with 1 stone. At the same time, you can create engagement and building your personal branding as a CEO or founder. But at the same time, if you are really honest about your vision, about what you're going through, about yourself, your employees as well will read that, right? So my employees are following me on social media where I actually talk about my thoughts and my, you know, my, where I'm going or what things inspire me. I do find that it's a way to show them, what I'm about and also to give them an idea of where I'm going and what I want to do.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting. I never looked at LinkedIn or social media like that before. But as you said, you're putting yourself out there to everyone, and the people that are going to read it, quite a lot of it, if they are in your team, they're going to be some of those ones. And as you said, killing 2 birds with 1 stone, because it's such an effective tool to raise awareness. But it really shows that you're doing, as you said, you lead by doing. So lead by being vulnerable and putting yourself out there, I'm sure has a huge effect, trickle down effect on your staff.
Yeah, tell your story, you know, show them what you did, this week, what you're going to do next week, where you're traveling, people that you met, and your thoughts about society, about, you know, things that they're passionate about. And people will get inspired by it. People will see it's like, this guy is good. I like this person. I want to follow them. I want to, and if they're working, obviously, you know, with me, then obviously they will feel more inspired by it. But I had people coming to me and say, hey, I want to work in your company because of, you know, because what you guys are posting, not just me, also my co-founders, right? And the founding team behind Pop-Up. It's not just literally just on me, like someone like even Daria, that she works in my team. She had people coming in. It's like, I'm so inspired about your post. I want to work with you. Not even with me, with some of my teams. So I think he has a trickle effect, you know,
Yeah, and I think it's amazing that, because, you know, just to give clarity to people listening, I think if they looked up the sorts of things you're posting, they might think you're sort of inspiring people by, you know, saying how well you guys are doing and, you know, this, that, and the other. But from what I know from your posting, it's very, you know, it's vulnerable, it's very honest, it's usually about, you know, stuff that's either going wrong or it's an insight here or there, and it's you know, it's not sort of showing off. Whereas, and I do get a lot of questions, particularly from founders that I work with and that I come across, and they sort of go, you know, but what about the people it's going to put off? You know, what if I get too vulnerable and people see me as weak, or see this insecurity that I have and think, oh, I'm not a good leader. You know, What would you say to all of that? Because in your experience of being vulnerable, I know that that's something that we all still have to get our heads around in terms of vulnerability. Sounds like it's sort of a weakness and can lead to people looking at you in maybe a different way. When you're supposed to be this sort of leader who knows what they're doing, when you say you don't know what you're doing, what effect is that having on people? What's been your experience?
I think there is a big misconception on that. I think people relate to you if you are relatable to them. And if you are a person that says, I'm always happy, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm never pissed off about anything, or I'm never weak, or I'm never feel never insecure, I know exactly what I'm doing. That's not relatable, because that's 99% of people don't feel like that. People constantly doubt themselves. They are pissed off about things. They suffer. They're happy sometimes and they're sad sometimes, right? So it's like if you come up like this macho or this idea of it's you might get engagements, you might get maybe some likes and stuff, but people are not going to relate to you. They're not going to follow you. They might engage with your content, but they're not going to follow you because you're not inspiring. You're not. To be inspiring, you have to be relatable. And to be relatable, you have to be like 99.9% of everyone. And everyone goes through shit. And that not happy all the time. You know, so it doesn't really matter. Even men, especially with men, I think I do find that man has this idea of like, you know, I shouldn't, you know, I should look in a certain way and I should be strong and you don't have to show emotions and things like that. But every person I met has emotions. I mean, maybe they don't show them to you in the way that I showed them to them. It is very open, but it doesn't mean that they're not there. So even though they might read your posts and they're not going to be a very, you know, open person about their emotion, deep down, they relate to you. Even if they don't say it, they relate to you. They might not say to you, oh yeah, but I am feeling insecure as well a lot of the times. They might not go in the open and say it. Deep down, they know. And then if you touch someone deep down, that's it. It doesn't really matter if they're going to, you know, copy you or come up and, you know, just being changed the way they behave, but you touched them in a way, right? And you might not even know about it. And I do get a lot of this sometimes, of people texting me and saying, you know, privately and say, I really relate to this. And when I check their LinkedIn, they never open about that, but then privately they would text me and say, hey, I saw your latest post. I really, really find myself. And they tell me their whole freaking story. Like, put it out there. Don't tell me, but. So I think I noticed this.
Yeah. And I've had the exact same situation with someone who's like, oh, I really like that particular post. And I go back and they haven't liked it. You know, it's like because they can't even fathom to know that their network is going to see that they've liked that post and that's like now a part of them. And I totally get it. We all do it slightly. You know, those ones that are a little bit more like on the edge and you're not sure if your whole network's going to judge you. If you like that post, someone sees it and goes, I didn't know he thought that. And it creates this complex, but it does remind me when I think of that sometimes my most powerful posts are going to be the ones that don't get the most amount of likes. And that is exactly why, because it's pushing the boundary of where people feel comfortable. And this is what I learned about LinkedIn, and I'd love to like talk to you about it a little bit. But this kind of, if you make a post too complex, or I think you go into a topic that's a little bit too much, I guess, in the gray zone, let's say, it just doesn't get the automatic like. And therefore, even though it could be pushing the boundaries of conversation and really helping a lot of people, it's not going to look like it. It's also not going to get the same amount of reach.
Yeah, sure. That's why I think there's a lot of wishy-washy content on LinkedIn right now. That's huge engagement, you know. And when I read it, and when I read that content, it's like they're not taking a stand. I mean, it's nice and it's crafted well and it's engaging and all of this. But when I read it, it's like, what did they give it to me? And then I read amazing posts from people that really make me think. That don't get an engagement. But then obviously there are some creators that are amazing and do both. They get great engagement at the same time. Mm. Their posts are incredible. But I'm not too caught up with that. And I got a little bit caught up at the beginning, you know, when you start getting followers and I'm now I really don't care anymore. I really don't. I just gonna post. I post every day because I think if my post can help people, I can inspire others. Fine. If I get engagement, okay. If I don't get engagement, I really don't. I really don't care anymore. I don't. I used to, but I don't care anymore.
And why do you think that is?
I think it burned me out as well. You know, it's like you enter in this kind of gratification from others, and then the numbers as well, they start to kind of, you get into the numbers. How many views did you get? How many engagement did you get? How many followers did you get today? Your post get viral or not? And you start getting into like tricks to make your post viral. And then you're like, what's the point? And you stop here. Like, why am I doing this? Literally, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I need to have 40,000 followers in my profile, or I'm doing this because I'm actually trying to do something constructive with this and inspire people or spread a message around or making a difference? So if that's the objective, then all the tactics that you're trying to do, that's our secondary. You should just focus on what you like to say and not worrying about metrics, because metrics are really detrimental. And I think because there's social comparison as well, it's like there's psychological factors that are really affecting your mental health, you know. And Instagram discovered this, right? When the report came out with teenagers and teenager and depression and suicide, it was linked with the engagement and the likes or the dislikes that they got. And I think that we're not teenagers, but we're not on Instagram. We're professional. We're on LinkedIn. But I do think that as professionals on that, you start to measure yourself to others based on how much engagement they get. And then when you enter in that game, that's it can be detrimental for your mental health.
100%. Yeah. And I see it with these social media platforms that, well, now LinkedIn is a social media platform, right? It's like, it's not really, it is to help you find a job, but it's also that. And I see a lot of people, because it's work related, they kind of get stuck into the trap of feeling like this can be work and therefore this could be good for me. And I'm progressing my career by either posting or like just looking at what everyone else is posting. And actually what you find after a while is it's like, it's exactly the same. And you've got to be very careful with how much you're consuming or how much you're, looking at the numbers on your particular posts. How you mentioned that you started and sort of fell into that trap and almost got, well, burnt out a bit. How have you come to this new way of using LinkedIn? What would your advice be to someone who's starting or has just started and finding it difficult, dealing with the pressures?
Yeah, I think you have to take LinkedIn as what it is. It's a platform, but it's also a tool. And if it's a tool, what is the purpose of the tool? And now you're going to measure if the tool is being successful for what you're trying to achieve. Once you have that, it becomes literally a job and a tool, and it should be like this. So for me, it's like, I want to do lead generation because I want to get, I don't know, 50 beta merchants into my platform in the next 3 months, right? So I'm going to use LinkedIn 3 hours a day, 2 hours a day to achieve this. And I'm going to do post about it that has to have a good engagement because I need to achieve this. It's nothing to do with my personal life or my, you know, sense of self or improving the way I feel about things. No, it's just, it has a purpose. That's it. I do it for business because of this and this and this. If I didn't have this business, would I use LinkedIn? No, I wouldn't. It would just be something that I don't need to use. Now that's where I think it's a trick, right? And for me it started like this, but then you're finding yourself on weekends, Saturday and Sunday on your phone on the couch scrolling LinkedIn, like doom scrolling for no purpose. You know, just like reading posts about people, not engaging, just like, you know, consuming content for no purpose, right? Or you use it as learning. You know, I'm following certain people that I like what they're saying, so I'm going to follow them to learn about certain things. I think always ask yourself, why am I doing this? What I'm trying to achieve in my life, and how I'm going to measure this as well. Because once you set up that, you set up like maybe a time limit, and you set up, did I achieve this goal or not? And once you have achieved this goal, maybe it's time for you to move away from the platform, or you have another goal, but then it has a purpose. When you start, I think, with no purpose and, you know, just like logging into the platform for the sake of doing it, like I did, that's where my mental health started to take a toll. Because then I was basically just trying to get followers, to get likes and to get engagement, and excusing myself that this was for the business, but I didn't track things anymore. So then I lose track of what I was trying to do.
Yeah, no, I totally resonate. I think it's particularly difficult for people at the moment, because as you said, it's almost like this trap. You know, it's sold as something that can be really good for your business. And then you just don't realize that, as you said, it's using it as a tool rather than being the tool, which is something that I've probably mentioned on here before.
And I think something else is like, fundamentally what I learned is that people don't want to be alone. Like, I think that's the biggest issue that as humans we have to face, you know, loneliness. We don't want to be alone. We want to be part of something. We are social creatures. We need to be part of the network. And this is where social media kind of brings people together. So you start to kind of finding your tribe on LinkedIn as well. And then people start complimenting you. And then you're kind of finding basically people with like-minded individuals and stuff. And that kind of becomes your safe place to go because you don't feel alone. But it's an illusion at the end of the day. I mean, networking is great, but it's a tool, you know, to build meaningful relationship. You can't build them on commenting on each other's posts. I mean, people that I comment on each other's posts. There's some people that I call and then I say, hey, let's schedule a call. And then we're 15 minutes chat, and now we became friends. And then eventually we met in real life and we have maybe monthly calls where we talk about things. I built relationship and I started to build like deep relationship, meaningful relationship with them. But there is a difference between, you know, posting on each other's posts and thinking that those people are your friends or people that care about you. I mean,
yeah,
not really. It's an illusion.
Yeah, I like that. And it made me think of, you know, human connection in levels. We kind of see it as all interactions. We often see it as all interactions are the same. You know, a like is the same as having like a good conversation with someone. But actually, you know, it goes sort of likes, comments, where people are, you're interacting with comments online. Okay, like that can be a little bit more engaging. And then it's like call on the phone, and then it's like in person. For me, this is, and then it's like in person conversation, and then it's like actual in person conversation where we are going into a really interesting, deeper topic, you know, of conversation. Again, that's for me, and we've each from my experience, we've each got to find what we love, the ways we love to socialize. Is it through sport? Is it through art? Is it through, you know, whatever else, just a walk, a conversation, and finding your way, because what you alluded to there is really the only thing. It always comes down to it, which is human connection and loneliness.
Yeah.
And that's what most depression is linked to.
Yeah.
A form of that.
Social media platform. I'm not against that. I mean, me and you, we met on LinkedIn, right? And, you know, we had an amazing conversation.
Yeah, it's a great example. Yeah,
exactly. My wife, I met her on Tinder, full disclosure. It was like, we did.
Wow.
Tinder. Yeah. And then we texted each other. We met, like, I think a week after we met on Tinder, I told her, I said, hey, I want to meet you in real life. I bought her a ticket to Estonia. She flew to Estonia. And then met. And then that's it. It was love at first sight. So, like, I'm not really against anything like that. So, but I think it's, you need to learn how to use them. You know, they're tools for a purpose, right? So I think if you want to use LinkedIn for networking, you need to understand, okay, what is networking for you? What is meaningful relationship for you? What does it mean, meaningful relationship for you? And how many you want to find out? How many people you want to connect and establish meaningful relationship this year? 10, 15, 20. That's it. Okay, that's your goal. Using it for that. But have a goal, I think. Having a goal allows you to track things and don't get lost in the craziness that social media is.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that, which is that it's like a tool to find and keep up to date with people. But if you don't then progress it further than the platform, you don't get the benefits, the full benefits of what you can use it for. So I think it's a really interesting point. I think I just hear it in a lot of conversations people are having more and more, not understanding. It's kind of the same as something I've put out before, which is about, and what I want to ask you about, just that sort of having a lot of people around you as a founder, you know, whether it's employees or clients or whatnot, is this point on human connection where you can have a lot of people around you. That doesn't necessarily mean that you feel you don't feel alone. So you can still feel alone having a lot of people around you. And I wanted to get your take on whether you believe that to be true and why you think that might be.
I mean, in a particular case, because I do feel it is lonely working in a remote company. Mm. We're fully distributed, fully remote, which means that we are all over the world spread out. And just very few people living even in the same country. To be honest with you, out of 30 people, I think we have few people that live in the same cities, maybe two or three. But I am the only person, for instance, in Ireland, right? And my co-founders, so they live all over the place. And my employees as well, they live all over the place. And so it is lonely because at the end of the day, it's me in front of a computer speaking to people. And there is a difference between meeting in real life and meeting and speaking in front of a, you know, having a video call. And I do see if I have meetings back to back when I actually meet people in real life, I'm usually feel quite energized. When I have 7 hours of calls, video calls, I'm completely drained. Because there is an energy exchange when you meet people in real life that you don't have when you have a video call, I think. Yep. So
yeah, 100%.
So yeah, it is lonely for remote companies. When you work in an office, I think is a little bit less. And this is where there is it's always been the big debate of like remote versus in person, especially when COVID hits and all of that. I always believed in a hybrid approach between the two. I don't think there should be fully remote or maybe fully with an office. I think if you can do both, if you can do something that you have an office that people can meet, or if you're a remote company, make sure that you organize offsite every 4 months, 3 months or 6 months, where you actually can get people together. Maybe not the whole company together, but maybe you get,
teams.
Exactly. Yeah. Even if it's, you have three team members living in the same city, you know, send them out for dinner once and just say, hey guys, go out for dinner. Meet together, have drinks, and have fun. That's it. That's enough, right? I don't think people need to be, I need to meet everyone in the company, not to feel alone. Sometimes it's just like, I just need to meet the guy that lives maybe 50 kilometers from me, right? And just get together.
Yeah.
And then I feel one person, two people. So there is small steps that we can take between, you know, the two extremes, which is like fully distributed or let's get an office and pay rent and bring both and make them commute every day.
Yeah. And I love the simplicity you brought to that and kind of alluded, which is kind of one of my last questions really is in these practical senses. You know, when people talk about culture and talk about how do we, you know, get employees to get to know each other when they're in remote companies and how do we make sure that we don't miss out on ideas, you know, that people used to have when they're walking to the coffee machine and, you know, all these things or just having lunch with one another. You kind of alluded to something that you do, maybe send them out to a dinner or get them together every 4 months. Are those some of the things that you do now in your company? And what, I know it's pretty new still, you know, in terms of building as a remote company, but what are some of the things that you do and would like to do ideally to bring about these connections within your employees?
Yeah, the dinner example was literally something that happened this morning because we just hired two more people in Ukraine. And I asked Daria that lives in Ukraine. For now, she was the only one living in Kyiv, and we just added two new people. So I said, hey, now you have actually two colleagues living in your city. So maybe in a couple of weeks, you know, go out and, you know, I'll expense the dinner out and drinks, you know, something like that. We have been looking into kind of bring all the company together, but it does cost quite a bit of money. So it literally just comes down to budget and location to do that. But we have been able to create, we're thinking about offsites because we have now we started to kind of being a little bit, you know, trying to use an approach where we hire people in similar areas or close by areas. So we can have these offsites where you can get the marketing team together, the engineering team together, or people living close by to each other. That's kind of more cost effective. And at the same time, as I was saying before, it's kind of a middle ground between, you know, doing a company summit that's going to cost you 150 grand to just fly, you know, 40 people over from all over the world, or, you know, something smaller, like sending people to dinner together, or maybe get the engineers to, you know, meet at the same time.
Yeah, I love it. I love the simplicity of it. I think people overthink, you know, what they need to do for their employees.
I think it's a misconception. You are, when you run a remote company, you're saving on certain things. So you're saving on rent, you're saving on heating, electricity, cleaning fees, and all of this. I don't think companies should take that budget as savings. I think that budget should be reallocated.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not about, oh, I'm running a remote company so we can save money on rent. No, you're not saving money on rent. We're running a remote company. Instead of spending money on rent, we are reallocating them into certain activities that allow people to be together. That's the approach that you should take on. Not saving, but reallocating budget.
I like that. Love it. Okay, I know you have to shoot off to, you're a busy guy. Last question really for you is you know, your one piece of advice that you would give to founder, you know, currently building a tech company remotely.
Oh, the company remotely.
Or just a tech company. Or just being a founder.
Oh, tech company. The company remotely can give an advice about remotely, but I think I already gave it to them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right?
I know it sounds very kind of a simple advice, but really find your purpose. Ask yourself why you're doing what you're doing, you know, and really believe in it and show it to the world and show it to your customers. I think that's the most important thing. I met a lot of founders that they don't really know why they're doing this. And a lot of the time they tell me, oh, because I wanted to have a company. I wanted to be a CEO. I wanted to. You know, I have ambitions and things like that. And ambition is good. I had ambitions as well. But I think you find your purpose, why you're doing what you're doing. Because it can be just that, because I want to make money, I want to create a massive company. Or someone told me that you become a billionaire, or I could say a millionaire. You become a millionaire when you're changing the life of a million people, not when you make a million, right? So I think it's like how you are planning to change in the life of a million people that eventually are going to be your customer. And I can assure everyone out there, it's like, if you do this, money will come. And also a lot of happiness and purpose and sense of, you know, achievement and all of this will come at the same time.
I love that. That's great. Awesome. And finally, so what's next for you and for PopUp? What are you currently doing? What are you currently building towards? What's the ambition you've got there?
Yeah, so I think we have big ambition because we built an e-commerce platform. And I think that alone was a big step for us. So not building an app that lives on top of another platform, but actually building an e-commerce platform, which now is, if you think about the e-commerce platform out there, it's Shopify. So end of the day, yeah, we're going to go head to head with them eventually. And our yearly budget is probably their weekly coffee budget. So it's kind of funny when I see that a lot of the times.
Yeah.
But we're now finally able to open up the platform for our beta. So we're kind of onboarding merchants. And this is really exciting because we're finally getting people to use what we've been building and to work towards their solving their problems and make them successful, because that's what I guess I'm passionate about. You know, if someone comes in and use the products and then it's at point A and I bring it to point B, right? And it's like that before and after effects, it's like you're using my product and now you're more successful and then you're happier. That's really what makes me happy at the end of the day. So I think that's where we're in, just like the next 4 months, really working with a lot of merchants and building with them at the same time. That's what I think what the beta is for. It's kind of an exciting time because we've been building it for a year and a half, even more. Because we bootstrapped it and then kept on building. Seeing the first time merchant using it, and we've been using it for a long time as well, because we had our own stores, but seeing other people using it, that's really, really exciting. So I think that's what's going to be the next for us.
Yeah, I can see you're going to get a lot of satisfaction out of that. Finally, like doing what you said that you want to do, which is, you know, help small businesses, which essentially run the world or should run the world, and create, you know, all sorts of incredible things. So again, thank you for your time, Matteo.
Thank you,
it's really awesome to speak to you. in this much depth. People can find you on LinkedIn. Is that the best place for them to go?
Yeah.
I'll pop it in the notes. I urge you guys to follow this man. He's a wonderful guy who I've recently met, and all down to LinkedIn. So thank you, LinkedIn. Hope you guys have enjoyed listening. Thanks again, Matteo.
Thanks, Alexi.
All the best.